If you have an agenda, it's on the entry on the table in the back, if you have any interest in that. Otherwise, we will proceed through the agenda. This morning calls for us to have a weekly business, a public hearing first, and that'd be the first order of business, and then we'll have that, close that, and we'll go on to the regular agenda, which begins under the administrative actions of number two. I'm just going to say, and next, before we begin any of this, let's just stand and pledge allegiance to the flag. And our first item of business is this public hearing regarding the 2016 Community Development Grant, the CDBG, from the Oregon Business Development Department for the Food and Friends Senior Resource Center. We have Mr. Cavallaro, who is the director of the Rogue Valley Council of Governments, here to answer all of our questions as to the importance of this. But we need to go through a process before we can get to this. And Mr. Cavallaro has some comments and also a script to be read for the public hearing. Are you going to be reading the first one, or is that going to be me? Are you just the public notice of the public hearing is going to be you?
I can read both.
Okay. Well, why don't I read the first one? The public hearing has been opened at 9:01. But I need to read this. The county is proposing to submit an application for a community development block grant to fund a portion of the Food and Friends Senior Resource Center. The proposed Food and Friends Senior Resource Center will serve as the county's largest senior meal site, as well as the distribution point for the remainder of Josephine County meals, including individually packaged home-delivered meals and bulk food for the county's other four meal sites. In addition to home-delivered and congregate meals 5 days a week and the potentially life-saving home-based safety checks of vulnerable seniors, the Food and Friends Senior Resource Center will be able to provide other services, including, but not limited to, specialized trainings designed to improve the ability of seniors to live with chronic conditions, to manage the responsibilities of being a caregiver, or to better care for a spouse or family member with dementia, and occasional or seasonal services such as blood pressure checks, flu shots, tax preparation assistance, or assistance with evaluating choices of supplemental medical Medicare insurance. So that is the purpose of this. And Mr. Cavallaro, if you have the other script that you will read to us.
Yes, apologizing in advance, it's a bit long, but CDBG requires us to read the entire public notice that was published in the newspaper. So Josephine County is eligible to apply for a 2016 Community Development Block Grant from the Oregon Business Development Department. Community Development Block Grant funds come from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. The grants can be used for public facilities and housing improvements, primarily for persons with low and moderate incomes. Approximately $11.5 million will be awarded to Oregon non-metropolitan cities and counties in 2016. The maximum grant that a city or county can receive is $2,500,000. Josephine County is preparing an application for a 2016 Community Development Block Grant from the Oregon Business Development Department for the Food and Friends Senior Resource Center at 1150 Northeast 9th Street, Grants Pass, Oregon, to serve Josephine County 60-plus seniors. It is estimated that the proposed project will benefit at least 1,100 persons, of whom 51% or more will be low to moderate income. We're here today, so obviously a public hearing will be held by the Josephine County Board of Commissioners at 9 a.m. on September 28, 2016 at the Ann Basker Auditorium, 600 Northwest 6th Street, Grants Pass, Oregon, 97526. The purpose of this hearing is for the Josephine County Board of Commissioners to obtain citizen views and to respond to questions and comments about community development and housing needs, especially the needs of low and moderate income persons, as well as other needs in the community that might be assisted with a community development block grant project and the proposed project. Written comments have also been welcome and were to be received by September 27, 2016 at the Board of Commissioners office, 500 Northwest 6th Street, Room, 154 Grants Pass, Oregon, 97525. Both oral and written comments will be considered by the Josephine County Board of Commissioners in deciding whether to apply. The location of the hearing is accessible to persons with disabilities. Please contact Wendy Watkins, Board of Commissioners Office, at 541-474-5221 if you will need any special accommodations to attend or participate in the meeting. More information about Oregon Community Development Block Grants, the proposed project, and records about Josephine County's past use of Community Development Block Grant funds is available for public review at Board of Commissioners Office, 500 Northwest 6th Street, Room 154, Grants Pass, Oregon, during regular office hours. Advance notice is requested. If special accommodations are needed, please notify Wendy Watkins, Board of Commissioners Office, at 541-474-5221 so that appropriate assistance can be provided. And finally, permanent involuntary displacement of persons or businesses is not anticipated as a result of the proposed project. If displacement becomes necessary, alternatives will be examined to minimize the displacement and provide required or reasonable benefits to those displaced. Any low and moderate income housing which is demolished or converted to another use will be replaced.
Thank you.
Okay.
And it should be noted that that notification was printed in the Daily Courier in English and in Spanish in conformity with the rules. If you have a population of 5% or more of Hispanic or any other nationalities, it had to also be printed in that language as well. So being we barely crested over the 5% level, it was printed in Spanish as well. Are there any particulars that you have that you want us to know in now before we discuss it amongst ourselves and open it up for public comment?
No, nothing in particular, just that the amount of funding that we've been obligated to raise as a match to the CDB grant, which is $520,000, we are now just $60,000 shy of that target. And while we pursue that other funding, our RBCOG Board of Directors has permitted us to pledge RBCOG funds in the interim. That's
all. Good. Great. It's been exciting to see the countywide and as well as foundation-wide support that is being shown for this very important project, too. The only one question I had was on what I have is page 17 of our electronic record here. 17 of 616 pages. Spare me the blessing, but anyway.
The pages aren't listed, so what's your correction?
They're up in the top, at least the high quality computers have it up on the top.
No, I'm not worried about that. It's so that the public can reference it.
Oh, yeah. This is on, should be on probably on page 16 of whatever they might have. But it's the section entitled Additional Program Requirements, Program Project Information, that it starts off with a list of permits needed and whether they have been obtained or not. The sentence begins with the proposed facility is currently a church building. Next sentence, the zoning is residential R2, and the proposed use has been identified as a, quote, public minor, end quote. This will be a change of use from religious to minor public, subject to a type 2 hearings officer approval. And I think we need to check with legal counsel, and he checked with the city. The city has a zoning land use types of public, comma, minor, and changing it from religious assembly, which this is being changed from. But I think just for conformity, we ought to make sure that the proposed use has been identified as a public, comma, minor, and that will change the use from religious to public, comma, minor in the other the final documents. Just a noted. Any other comments that you might have?
No, I think minor less on the specifics of the agreement here, the CBDG grant, and more to just the process. I don't know if you want to speak to that, but this is not something that's just been going on for a year and a half. Frankly, this has been going on for over a decade, this progress, this idea of moving. provide greater breadth of services to those vulnerable populations. I think it's a really good thing.
Yeah, it was tough at the time.
Yep.
I have kids, so I know what it's like to tell them this is for your own good, trust
right.
me. Right. So it is for our own
for
good.
The long-term benefit of
right.
the program and everybody's
exactly.
concern.
Right.
But it was, we did have growing pains, I guess,
yes.
as you would say, through this process. And I think we've come out stronger as a result. And it's going to be, you know, you're never going to have to deal with this issue again of being that, you know, staying over at somebody else's yard.
Right,
it's
staying
it's
too
yours.
Long at somebody's house and
yeah.
starting to stink like fish, right.
Yeah, yeah. It's yours, so it's really going to be great.
Yeah, it's going from an adequate facility or workable facility
right.
now to a facility which is owned by RVCOG and able to expand and to do more than just what was being done in the old facility that was housed in the fairgrounds. So
right, it'll be
really
designed for the
yep.
for the use.
Right. Anything else you want to mention on this?
No, I just appreciate the assistance and the collaboration. I do, both the county and the city of Grants Pass, which mm-hmm. really stepped up.
Well, I think an unsung hero in all of this is probably Pat Foley, who knows these CBDG processes
yes.
pretty well and steered us all in the right direction. So
I'll let her know.
Yeah, we really appreciate her very kind way she does things.
And very capable.
Yeah, she really is.
Okay, I will close the close the public hearing. Yeah, open the public comment. That's what I was going to say. And if anybody has any comments to make on this particular topic, just let me know. Raise your hand, and I'll call you up. Yes, sir.
Jim Davis. I live on 9th Street.
Did you get the last name?
That was Davis. Jim Davis.
Oh, Davis. Okay, sure.
I live on 9th Street. Myself and some of my neighbors have a concern over traffic. I'm assuming that it's going to be people coming and going around noon or 11 in the morning or something. I don't know if you can answer to that or not. What time do they usually pick up at the river?
But we can ask him yeah. to explain some of those answers. Those
okay.
Items
right.
that might come up
I don't
that.
Know your format, so I'm
we
sorry.
Don't have
We're concerned over traffic going south on 9th Street because there's hundreds of high school kids that cross 9th and 8th. They don't look and they don't use the crosswalk. It will entail a very dangerous situation, we feel, in that most of the people that deliver are of my age, seniors. Their reflexes are not as not as good as the high schoolers. And literally the high schoolers do not even look. They walk straight into traffic. So that is one grave concern that we have. The next one would be parking, in that you've got several things going on there, and that's not a very huge parking lot. I don't know if they're going to be able to increase that or whatever. It seems limited, especially when you get people coming in for a short time. I think it would be quite limited depending on what other activities are going on. Another thing would be the on-site dining. And I know that they do some of that now. It sounds like that might be expanding. I also know that the city is trying to move out any homeless dining that's downtown, basically, and get it out of the downtown area. But I can assure you that we don't want it out one block from an elementary school and a few blocks from a high school. That just is not appropriate. Our estimation, and we will fight that. So those are my three comments.
Good. And we'll get an answer for you as soon as we get done with the other public comment. We'll ask
Thank you.
A couple of answers. Thank you. Anybody else want to comment on this upcoming proposal? If not, Mr. Cavallaro, maybe you could respond to those three points that he was asked.
Okay, in terms of activities at the meal site, usually volunteers start arriving around 10 or 10:30, the volunteer drivers, and assist with the packaging of the meals, and then they individually take off in their personal cars with their home delivery meals loaded in the vehicles. So there's not a real concentration of people at any point there. There's just single vehicles entering and leaving. the meal site, we're anticipating maybe 35 or 40 people, at least initially, at any given day. And those individuals usually get there around 11:30 or so. It may differ from Ringette at the current site a little bit. We'll have to see. But a number of those individuals come in a, often people come in a single car. There's more than one individual. So we're talking maybe 25 cars, because some people come with buses, and we'll be sure to have a conversation about bus traffic and how close can that get to the actual meal site, because that would assist us and would assist the seniors who don't drive but don't qualify for home-delivered meals. The idea is to get them out and get them socializing. So the parking lot, in our opinion, is of sufficient size, and it will be restriped and designed a little better than it is now to make maximum use of that parking lot. Seniors are not prone to parking in the street. The building is a distance away from the street because the parking lot's between the building and the street, so they're going to be much more prone to be parking in the parking lot, so we don't anticipate that issue. The issue with the school, that's good information. We will make sure that we let the congregate participants know and the volunteer drivers that caution's required, and suggest to them that maybe they go out, what's the street that crosses 9th Street that's away from the school? Anyway, to get onto 7th and go either 6th or 7th and not go by the school if that's at all possible. But we'll continue to remind them that there's a school there and they should take precautions. You know, generally, seniors are pretty slow drivers, so at least there's that. But we will do that. And this is not designed for any kind of homeless dining. This is a senior meal site. We haven't had an issue with homeless individuals dining at the site. I mean, if they're over 60, that is their right according to law, but we just haven't seen that happen at Ringette. And we think that there's probably equal opportunity at both sites, and if it hasn't been an issue in Ringette, it's probably not going to be an issue at the meal site. But it's not a place that people can linger anyway or are prone to linger, so we don't. It just hasn't been an issue in any of our meal sites in the county, in either county, Josephine or Jackson counties. It's just not a congregation site for the homeless.
That's important to reiterate, too, that this is not a homeless feeding program.
Right.
And that has nothing to do with the other issues that have come up in the city limits, the current struggles that are here. But it is not a homeless gathering site to dine on. This is a senior's 60 over, and most of those folks that come are driving their own vehicle or carpooling with some other individual that's going.
Right, and when we do have the workshops that have to do with senior issues like chronic pain or diabetes or how to manage life with a spouse with dementia or some chronic condition, those will take place at different hours, probably in the afternoon, so there won't be an overlap with the people enjoying the noon meal, so we won't be adding traffic to, we won't be adding people to the existing participants. So the parking issue won't be exacerbated. The lunch crowd will leave, and at some point if we have a workshop or a training, 12, 15 people or so, then they would come at a later date. One point I would like to make is that the building being vacant is a much bigger draw for vagrants and the homeless than an operating site would be. So I think what we're doing is we're eliminating a potential issue or an existing issue. The building was broken into and people did some rather nasty things inside the building because it's not occupied and the neighbors can only watch out so much. So once this building is renovated and is occupied, there'll be much less chance of something going on there than there is right now. So we're actually improving the situation.
Good, thank you. Any other comments that you have? It's 9:20, the public hearing. I will close the public hearing. Our next point on the agenda is point number 2, administrative actions and consideration of first item is the approval of application for the 2016 Community Development Block Grant from the Oregon Business Development Department for the Food and Friends Senior Resource Center, the item we've been discussing. Is there any other comment that you have on this?
No, I think just to explain for the public, we have an administrative action all over the hearing,
right.
So we're going to be going through that calendar of actions. We weren't taking any action at the hearing. It's a little confusing, but that's how our agenda is. I'm fine if we cover the point.
We also have 2B, which is the approval of the IGA intergovernmental agreement with the Oregon State Marine Board. Agreement number 250-2016 Josephine-001 for boating law enforcement, and Sheriff Daniel is here to take us on a ride, or float, I guess.
Thank you, Commissioners. Dave Daniel, Josephine County Sheriff. I bring to you that agreement, that intergovernmental agreement with the Oregon State Marine Board and Josephine County. In essence, what this does is this funds our marine program at the Sheriff's Office. Brings a total of $152,407.54 to Josephine County, paid for all-inclusive by the State Marine Board for a boat, gas, personnel to work the waterways in Josephine County for safety and enforcement.
And we've had this before.
This is a renewal
of a previous grant, basically?
Yes, this is literally a renewal. We've had it for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And every year we must go through this to try and get that maintained.
And this is going to be adequate to provide the services we've had in the past? Or will
this will provide one deputy, basically. I'm shooting for to try and get additional deputies right now, and working with the State Marine Board. Funds are always the issue. I think we need more, to be honest with you. The State Marine Board's looking at beginning a new tax on non-motorized watercraft down the road. Who knows whether that's going to happen or not. Should that take place, I'll be up in Salem fighting for that money.
Okay. Any questions?
No, thank you for the work you do.
Thanks.
Thank you. On to the next item, which is the approval of agreement number 31476 between ODOT Rail and Public Transit Division and Josephine County for a transit vehicle replacement. Mr. Chancy.
Morning.
Good morning, sir.
This is a grant agreement that's going to provide for two medium-duty transit vehicles that will be put into service here in Josephine County. The match requirement of $45,900 is provided in another grant that was approved by you, I think it was last 2 weeks ago. So there's no cost to Josephine County. There's no local match requirement that has to come out of pocket here. It's all being provided by the state. So these two vehicles that are being purchased are going to replace two vehicles in the existing fleet that are beyond their useful life. So they have well over 200,000 miles and are well over 7 years old. So these vehicles are greatly needed. As you know, we've made a move to go to the larger type vehicles. This is more of a stopgap measure because the larger vehicles are about twice as much as these. So it takes a little bit of money to save that up to be able to purchase them. So we will move that way, but after these are purchased, I think we're looking at getting at least one large vehicle a year until the entire fleet's replaced. So, and these will be the exact same vehicles that we have out there now, the blue ones, the low floor. So
those are really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, and I know you've heard it before, but not judging your own heart, but I don't think that you could ever hear it too much. The improvement of the Josephine County transit system has been marvelously done under your leadership, and you are to be commended for that. And it is deeply appreciated by all who, especially those who write it and use it, but also for the county itself. It's a real delight to have and a benefit to have for so many people that would not be able to get around if it were not for what you all do with your program. So thank you.
Thank you, and we're always striving to improve.
I think the thing that is really sets our transit system apart from a lot of areas in the state is we don't have a formal district that supports it financially like the RVTD over in Medford or some other parts of the state that actually use general tax money to fund this kind of program. We were able to do it leveraging different kinds of grants. So I think that's pretty commendable.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
On to number 2D, David, approval of order number 2016-043 in the matter of declaring county-owned personal property as surplus, disposal by transfer to nonprofit, handicap awareness and support league, CASEL, and report and recommendation. We have Robert Keith.
Good morning, Commissioners. What you have before you is a recommendation, report and recommendation to declare bus 03663 as excess. So for the purposes of donating it, what we've identified is the Handicap Awareness and Support League as a possible recipient for this bus. The bus is over 13 years old, has 170,000 miles on it, and is no longer required for our services at this point. And coming up before you in a couple of weeks anyways will be another list of excess equipment and vehicles. And this one was originally on that. We took it out of that list, so we could donate this to the CASEL. So what we need to do is approve the report and recommendation for declaring the bus as excess and signing the board order allowing us to transfer the time to CASEL.
Could you maybe explain to some folks that might have a question mark in their head that this is a vehicle that is working, able to be used? It's only got 186,000 miles on it. Why do we have to buy a new one?
Right. This is actually, the vehicle itself has reached the end of its serviceable life. As far as the transit authority is concerned, anything over 150,000 miles, they consider it fully depreciated and take possession of the title at that point. Normally, we'll run a bus as long as we can. This one ran for 178,000 miles. It does have some minor issues with it. Like I said, I've got two other buses that I want to have to clear its excess, which has probably some head issues. The head gaskets have to be replaced, so it's no longer feasible to maintain these vehicles for the cost that's going to be put into them. So we do at times donate these things, we donate the buses. This one is completely serviceable. They'll get many, many years out of it for what they're going to do for the purposes of our transit, though. It's going to end up being a money pit in all, right? So within probably a year, it might need some more work to it. Possibly not, we don't know. But we make a business decision that it's no longer serviceable for us anyways, it's cost effective for us to maintain the vehicle. So that's why we donate this. Yeah.
And CASEL, for folks that I'm not familiar with the acronym, the Handicap Awareness and Support League, CASEL. They are located here in the county, and they do a lot of work facilitating ease of transport and other things for those who struggle with these issues of handicap issues, and it's a good organization to be able to donate to them. So thank you very much. That concludes the administrative calendar and agenda, and open it up for public hearing, public comments. If you have any comments you'd like to make on the agenda to the board, please feel free to do so. Just come to the podium. Once you're recognized, state your name, address, not necessarily the numerical address, but where the area that you might live. And you have up to 3 minutes to talk to the board about any items of concern to you. So we'll start with you, sir.
Hello, my name is David Everest, and I have a mining claim in Josephine County, and I'm here today to put a series of notices to clarify appointments for the 1872 Mining Act that I've demanded, notice and demand for a primary trustee be appointed to the grant. And I'm not going to read all those because it's several pages, and I'll give them to the clerk where they can email them to the commissioners. I am going to read one notice. A notice of memorandum of understanding by Josephine County Commissioner, state agents, and Josephine County Attorney, Mr. Hicks, U.S. BLM General Trustee Christopher B. DeWitt, he's Chief of Minerals and Mining for the BLM, and the Inspector General's Office, and basically Donna Mickley. This is a list of laundry names of people this is going to. Basically, this is an understanding that mining districts are a government, and in the record I put, well, I think it was 2012, my mining district, Twin Cedar Mining District, and you approved it in a consent calendar, and nobody objected, and so we never, it stands approved as that I'm your equal, as you are a local government, I'm a local government, a library district's a local government, the different districts that exist in different counties and different things. So as a mining district, we're a local government. And I'm also demanding in the second letter that I wrote these up last night. I was all up all night. The second letter is a notice of coordination to appoint the trustee. And what I'm looking for is Mr. Hicks to write a letter of memoranda recognizing me as, which you guys have already done in the consent calendar, recognizing me as a local government with the power of coordination so I can coordinate with the federal authorities to appoint the trustee. And Mr. Hicks, I'm going to go by and see him here shortly if he's got time for me. But that's basically all I have to say today, except that it's good to see you, Commissioner Hare. The last meeting I was at, you were gone. And hopefully sometime we can have a chat. But hey, hopefully you can get Wally Hicks to rule on this and write a memorandum of understanding. And I think the Galise Mining District needs one too as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes.
Larry Ford, 136 Ferry Road, Grants Pass. It's good to see Scott here today. I think the public transit system has been enhanced by his work here. The bigger buses, though, certainly point to a shortfall we've had here, and that is our bus hub, which have to be right outside. Someone is going to get hurt here sooner or later. I know that RV Act has, there's money coming up. I believe it's not this year, but next year, maybe the year after, to replace that hub. Seems woefully short to me. I would suggest to the county commissioners to look for maybe alternate funding to be repaid back when ODOT comes through with their much beleaguered funds and get started sooner than later on moving the transit hub to an alternate site that's already been picked out. I think it's something that the county should really look at to do to get these buses off of 6th Street because it is a public safety issue in my mind. The second thing, and I've brought this up before and I'm going to continue, is the fact that the county does all the assessment work on taxation, collects all the taxes, and distributes most of the money out to people other than the county and get no sort of refund or remunication on the funds that we collect. I know this was brought up a few years ago in the Senate or the House and it died and it never got to the floor. I think we need to push our local representatives to bring that back up in the next cycle. You know, it doesn't have to be much. It just means, just like everybody else in our county, and I believe it should be in our state, is if you collect money, you should pay for that service. And I think you could do it for a couple of percent, and it would be something that makes perfect sense to me. They need to pay for their ability to collect money through our county tax system, and at this time they don't. They get it basically for free, and I don't believe that's right. We spend, the county taxpayers spend money on the employees to do all the work, and they should be held accountable for their portion of that work. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else making a comment? Yes.
Brad Converse, Grants Pass. I just wanted to say thank you for your staff's work on getting the YouTube situation all figured out. So I presented month or two ago at this point about our outdated system that we were previously using. It was slow, it was really hard to find items, and now every Wednesday at 9 a.m. I get an alert on my phone that the YouTube stream is live. I know there's like 7 people watching right now, and it seems to be going really well. So that was pretty much all done, I believe, by John McCafferty. So great job to your staff, and thank you for taking action. Appreciate it.
Thanks for the notice and the compliment. Thank you. Anyone else have any comments? Bring it back to the board.
Yes, Mr. Chair, just a couple things. Mr. Evers has left the room. It's been a while since he's visited with us. It's been an ongoing battle for him in his pursuit of mining opportunities on his Twin Cedar mining claim. He's had some challenges with the federal agencies and some other things. Looking to leverage coordination is something that the county often does and is provided for under Article 43 of the Federal Land Policy Management Act in 1976. The county, just for clarification, does not grant a coordination status. That is strictly done by Article 43 of the code, and we are provided for in that code as an opportunity to coordinate with federal and state agencies. I just wanted to make that clarification, and also that Mr. Hicks is an independently elected person, a legal counsel. He's the only one in the state, perhaps the only one in the nation, and so he does not necessarily serve at the pleasure of the board like other staff. So that's a distinction for the public and for Mr. Everest to keep in mind. Mr. Ford, I think you make a really good point. It's unfortunate that these transit projects seem to take an exorbitantly long time. I mean, we had probably recognized those opportunities, those parcels over there, as surplus county property that we could use for relocating a transit hub and such close to 5 years ago. It dawned on me when I was walking past it. I was like, who owns these? And I found out it was us. And then I said, well, wouldn't that make a great place for a transit hub? And then, you know, maybe we'll get appropriations in a couple of years. But we're working on those kinds of things now. There's engineering that needs to be done. I don't want anybody to get the false impression, including myself, that there won't be a bus stop out here when we move the hub. It will just be a bus stop, though. It won't be the holdover kind of location. Hopefully the people that are congregating around there will see less of a need and will move someplace else or find something else to do with their time. You raised the other issue of the assessor's office not being able to assess a fee, or the treasurer's office of the tax collector. So it was House Bill 3456. Connie Roach, our assessor, worked on drafting that and refining it. It's an unknown principle, the fact that counties across the state and maybe across the nation, they do all this tax and assessment. And we used to do it, we still do it, for free of charge, because we used to have plenty of revenue. We were well-suited for that kind of activity. And now that we're really fiscally constrained, we don't have the ONC funds or shared receipts right now. We are in shared receipts, but every dollar counts. We spend $600,000 in excess of general fund money that is not available to the public safety program. So Sheriff Daniels doesn't have access to that because the county is almost obliged to spend those kind of general fund dollars on those two programs, or we get a nasty gram from the state. We distribute 91.9% of the revenue we collect. So roughly $72, $73 million is what Josephine County pays in taxes. We only keep 8.1% of that. None of it is really, part of it covers that administrative overhead. But part of that is the jail bond. We only collect 7.9, keep that as our general fund out of all of the money collected. So I've had staff in my office who come in and said, how come you can't afford to do stuff? I just wrote you a check for $1,600, $2,400. And I said, I find it offensive that you're a staff person working for the county that you don't know that 92% of that money that you write a check to the county leaves us statutorily within 30 days. We don't keep that money. So it's a misnomer and falsity that with people writing a check to Josephine County thinking we're keeping all of this money, we're not. We're sending it to the city, we're sending it to the school districts and all of the other taxing districts, the 13 that make up Josephine County. We are diligently pursuing that. I think Carl Wilson's office is actually taken a particular interest in that piece of past legislation that never really made it. The problem with trying to pass something like that, not to belabor the subject, is there's a portion of the state that doesn't have a problem paying for assessment taxation. And so ideally, we just open this up as an option to counties to assess up to 2%. Connie believes, and working with EBRC, that they can do it for less than that, probably 1.2%. And cover our costs. We're very efficient in those two offices. So I think that's an important distinction. Mr. Converse, you're a rarity to come in and provide a compliment, but I believe we've done a lot of due diligence, not just in our IT department, with trying to match those things. Public transparency in our processes is really key, and getting those out to the most relevant ways is really, really what we wanted and strive to do as a Board of Commissioners. In the last couple of years, we've made significant technological advances. We'd call them significant. Taking the board extensively and exclusively to electronic, we've saved probably thousands of dollars over the lifespan of a commissioner's term and not having paper. 660 pages done four or five different times really adds up, not just on the purchasing of paper, but on the refuse side. It costs us even money to recycle. So the whole spectrum, and that's just one weekly business session and stuff. So it's multiplied innumerably, you know, the amount of paper that just that comes through our board's office, and having cut that down to virtually nothing has been a big one little step in making the progress towards becoming more efficient. And so we're never going to stop looking for those ways to become more transparent with our processes. Unfortunately, talking about transparency, usually we have an administrative meeting that is a precursor to this weekly business session, 6 days in advance. One of the reasons we had more people than normal coming and providing testimony on the items that were approved today in our admin calendar is the fact that we didn't have that admin meeting 6 days ago. A lot of times the board of commissioners will carry those messages forward, but these were non-controversial items that needed to have explanation by qualified staff to make a decision. So that's one of those processes that we didn't get to do this week.
Last one. Good. I really have no comments other than what have already been made, so we'll look for action on the administrative calendar.
Yes, sir. If you're looking to seek action on item 2A, I would move for approval of application for the 2016 Community Development Block Grant CBDG from the Oregon Business Development Department for the Pru and Friends Senior Resource Center.
And I will happily second that. Any other comment you might have?
Is that the formal title of the center? We're not naming it the Mike Cavalera.
Yeah.
I think I don't want it to go without saying how much we appreciate your diligence on this. You've had a cool head through all of this process, Mr. Cavalero. You've kept your eye on the prize, which is really serving the public in the best possible way with the best possible facilities. And we are pleased to be able to match your efforts as far as the cash contribution, really just flowing through the county. That's all it is. You're accessing these funds through the county who can apply for them. Without you and your staff to be able to facilitate this, we wouldn't have the resources to do it. So I just really appreciate you keeping the diligence and the focus on this. And we're going to see it through, and it's going to be really great. So very, very positive for everybody around.
And if you had the mistaken pleasure of trying to read through the application, this is when you swallow twice and you realize, how come these things cost so much money? And why, what's the reason for the delays on these things? When you realize what we're talking about, this CBDG grant, or CDBG grant, took 614 pages of material, a stack that big for this one grant, and to go through all those hoops and all that kind of stuff just to do what we're doing. It just contributes to the whole process. And the necessity of publishing in Spanish as well as English, because we have more than 1,000 Spanish speakers here, all these things add up, contribute to the cost of what you and I would look at as a Hakimist. Why does it cost so much money? And that's part of the reason for it. So it's coming to a good conclusion, a good end. This does not mean it's the end of the fundraising efforts for RB COG to be able to establish that program up here in the old Church of the Nazarene building up on 9th Street. But yet we can still, as a community, look forward to being benefited by this, even as we as a community can benefit RV COG in the additional, what, $60,000 that is needed. So I will second your motion and ask Nicola.
Yes.
Yes. The motion is passed unanimously with the present commissioners. On to 2B, approval of the IGA with the Oregon State Marine Board, agreement number 250-2016, Josephine-001, for boating law enforcement.
I'll move for approval of item 2B.
And again, I will second that. And again, the process that we have to go through and different agencies have to go through and the Sheriff's Department is going through to be able to have these support systems is I won't say onerous, but it is rather lengthy, and it has to be constantly kept on top of. Any other comments?
I just want to commend Deputy Fields for his work on the rivers. His experience, I mean, I grew up knowing Ernie as a guy who just gets compliance through
influence.
Yeah, he just has such a demeanor that isn't debatable. You're gonna do what he asks you to do, not just because he's wearing a badge, which is a really good reason. But he's out on the river himself, personally, and having a good time. He knows the boundaries where you're supposed to be, what you're not supposed to be doing, and you're not gonna trick him. You know, he's seen it all. So he's such an asset, not just the position, the person who's in it. So I think we're really blessed to have all the person like that looking after all the recreators on the river.
You're here. Call the roll, please.
Yes.
Yes. Motion is passed. On to 2C, the approval of agreement number 31476 between ODOT and Rail and Public Transit Division and Josephine County for transit vehicle replacements.
I'll make a motion to approve item 2C.
And I will second that. Any other comments?
No, just Mr. Jensen.
Call the roll, please.
Yes.
Yes. Motion is approved. On to 2D, the approval of order number 2016-043 in the manner of declaring county-owned personal property a surplus, disposal by transfer to nonprofit, handicap awareness and support league, HASL, and report and recommendation. Any comments?
I just make for approval.
And I will second the motion. Call the roll.
Well, I think I had a point that I wanted to say.
Sorry, yeah.
When we look to dispose of something like this, in my opinion, it's still contributing and adding value to the community. So if it has a residual value of $40,000 or whatever that we may have gotten through an auction process, I believe that those funds are really just kind of being shifted around through community programs that are really in vital need. The HASL program, it seems like a thing that's a luxury for some, but if you were handicapped, I've just been conscious of that, the idea that you don't notice these things that are a true impediment to people and the difference that HASL makes in their processes. So it's pretty vital for a population of Josephine County to have these kind of resources. Yes.
Yes. The motion of 2D is approved. On to approval of our consent calendar. 4A consists of the minutes of the following meetings. Weekly business session, September 7th. Executive session, open session, September 7th. County administrative workshop, September 8th. General discussion, September 8th. General discussion, September 13th. Executive session, the open session, on September 14th. Weekly business session on September 14th, all of 2016.
Move for approval of the consent calendar items 4A.
And I will second that. Call the roll, please.
Yes.
Yes. Motion is approved. We on to number 5. Any other matters you have?
I have none, sir.
None here. Any other matters from commissioners?
Yes. So last week, one of the reasons why we didn't have an administrative hearing was the fact that I was out of town. I was up in Salem testifying to the DLCD, the Department of Land Conservation and Development, on Executive Order 1207, which was a pilot project that was granted by the governor, Governor Kitzhaber, in 2012 for a regional study and proposed rule change to DLCD. We actually didn't propose a rule change. We couldn't come to a consensus in the time provided, although the time was extensive. It was 3.5 years for this project. And the idea was that Jackson, Josephine, and Douglas counties would look at their marginal farm and forest land and the definitions that guide how that can be developed and refine a process for people who either were miszoned, have that zoning in order to improve the highest and best use of those properties if they weren't for forest or agriculture. They don't lend themselves to those things. We discovered a lot through this process. I think it wasn't for naught. Julie Schmelzer, our new community development director, is going to be taking some of the product from that 3 years and the different tasks that we went through and really refine those things and bring them back to the board through the Rural Land Development Commission, Rural Land Development Commission, RLDC, to figure out a way to change our code individually as opposed to applying to the state for an entire entire rule change. I don't think that would have been successful in the first part. And second, they're actually looking at trying to do that themselves. So part of that will be that an ongoing process that's never really over is I'll be working with DLCD, their staff, and that commission to try to refine the state rules around what people can do. So I think that's going to be really positive. There's a couple of other things that we need to fix, and we're going to. So it was a good opportunity to make sure that they heard at the state level that there are inadequacies with the state land use laws, and they need to be fixed. And was their intent all along? You know, it was never supposed to be one size fits all, and the rules being established in the early 70s, 76, and they were going to be done. They're an ongoing process of refinement. So one of the things that I traveled from there to Lincoln City for the ONC board meeting. There is some movement on federal forest management legislation. It's in the energy bill. It passed out of the House subcommittee and has gone to the Senate and is being looked up by Chairman Bishop of the Energy Committee. And I think it's gonna have potential. Nothing will happen, I would imagine, before the election. In fact, the Senate, I understand, is gone. The House is looking to pass a CR, a continuing resolution to continue funding the government through the end of October, the beginning of November. But we could see what's called a lame duck session, where there's members of Congress who did not get reelected in the Senate, and they may be moving at their last opportunity for some meaningful legislation. The energy bill is our opportunity. There is bipartisan support for this forest management. It's not everything we ever wanted, but it is a step in the right direction. A lot of it focuses on fire funding reform. So currently it's paid for out of the agency's budgets, either BLM or Forest Service. Same with the state. That wouldn't change the state. This is federal legislation. This would have reimbursement to the agencies out of the Federal Emergency Management Administration. Frankly, it's just shifting costs. And unfortunately, I'm not sure that it really solves much of a problem from the forest management component. Just kind of shifts the funding stream. One of the arguments that we've heard from the agencies is that at the end of the day, after fire season, they don't have any money left to do management, because they spent it all fighting fire. So at least that would alleviate that argument that agencies wouldn't be held responsible for fighting catastrophic wildfire over a certain threshold out of their own budgets, that it would be paid for. So that was one of the elements that we talked about. We also talked about the ONC litigation that is ongoing. Josephine County is unique in its participation, and we have joined some other lawsuits, AFRC specifically, American Forest Resource Council, on two specific things. But that will be ongoing. That litigation is far from over, and we're working to maintain the standing of that litigation in the D.C. District Court. There's been a case filed on the BLM's resource management plan in Eugene by a conglomerate of environmentally focused organizations over the principal issue is the riparian setback. Reduced under this plan from 2 tree lengths to 1, and they didn't feel that was appropriate rulemaking within the resource management plan. I completely disagree. That's what we're doing. We're talking about rulemaking within this resource management plan. It's not a provision that's set out by the Endangered Species Act or any other specific piece of legislation that requires that riparian setback. It's a rule. And so we don't expect that to generate too much, but at the same time, if it's left unchallenged, it could have big consequences. So all of this is kind of I don't want to call it a game, because a game alludes to the idea that there's not much at stake. There's a tremendous amount at stake. So I don't want to go into too much detail, because I can see people's eyes glossing over, but I can talk about ONC litigation all day long. And perhaps at some point I might be able to provide a briefing to the board with people who are specifically interested in this ONC litigation. It's confusing, it's cumbersome, elements of it have been going on for over a decade. I don't pretend to know everything about it, but I can speak to it for a good half hour to an hour without getting anything too far off. So I'm intimately involved in it. I eat, sleep, and breathe this stuff. And, so there's a lot going on in a lot of different arenas. Just keep people aware that we are continually working on it. The funding element of the county is probably no more fundamental than anywhere else. We have, it's paramount for us that we have that funding. It will never return to the $14 million that we used to generate out of shared receipts, but somewhere in the middle, I'm thinking around that $7 million mark, 50% of the historic revenues would probably be really positive. And so moving forward, that's our goal, and I think it's achievable. I think Senator Wyden recognizes the inadequacies of this recent resource management plan. Frankly, nobody but the agency likes it. The enviros don't like it. The agency doesn't. The members of the agency seem to like it, but most everybody else really doesn't. So I think it's primed for an opportunity for litigation only leverages legislation. So we'll get that. That's the equation. That's the formula that we're going to hopefully drive some sort of meaningful change.
Hopefully it will be,
in my life,
beneficial legislation.
Yeah.
Our goal is to not lose ground, that's for sure.
Commissioner Hare brings up a good point. Between some of these things, many of these things, are based on rules. They're not based on laws that you or I might have voted on or supported. But we realize that those people who are in charge of these various agencies in the government, federal and state, have tremendous authority to make rules that become binding upon us as citizens. And if we're not constantly talking about it, being made aware of it, contacting our legislators, those who have the ability to look at these things or adapt some of these things, then we're just really in the dark, and we realize what the next rule is going to allow or not allow us to do. But it's an important difference. Also, just on the next week, the 5th of October. Is right there, the 5th of October, here in the Ambassador at 6 p.m. will be the next candidates forum for the candidates running for office in Josephine County. From commissioners on down to Commissioner Field. I think it's just going to be the four commissioner candidates. That'll be next Wednesday right here in the Ambassador. So, anything else, last time?
I would be remiss if I didn't say something. Saturday is going to be the one-year anniversary of the UCC incident at Umpqua Community College in Roseburg. It's amazing how fast time goes, but I think for a lot of people in that area who experienced that, it's like it happened yesterday. I don't know that you'd ever kind of get past something like that. I suppose every day gets easier, but just talking to Commissioner Tim Freeman of Douglas County, it's still very real part of that community's identity, unfortunately. So just thinking about those family members who lost loved ones and who were involved in that tragedy.
It happens very quick. Okay, it is 9:58, and this meeting is adjourned.